This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are scheduled to hear from State Representative Katrina Jackson, Democrat from Monroe and member of the Black Caucus. She has some thoughts about the governor's ambitious agenda as we prepare for the opening of the legislative session and Governor Jindal's opening remarks come Monday. The governor's been traveling the state making a case for his tax swap, but indications are that it's in trouble. We'll find out from Katrina Jackson how the Black Caucus is viewing the potential tax change. Also on the show, Chris Brooks, the general manager of Dig Magazine. He is involved as the chair of the Blues Fest for 2013 in Baton Rouge. And that event, which is always one of the major ones in our community, is coming soon. All this, but now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And outside our area, please call 877-217-5757 toll-free. You may also reach us through email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. We start with Representative Katrina Jackson, Democrat from Monroe, a lawyer in her first term and a member of the Black Caucus. And Representative Jackson is here to talk about the opening of the legislative session coming this week. And I think we've temporarily lost the representative, so hopefully we will have her back soon, but soon as in a few minutes, if not sooner. But at any rate, Governor Bobby Jindal will address lawmakers come Monday. The session begins with earnest, and an ambitious agenda has been forwarded by the governor of Louisiana, who begins his sixth year in office. Now, his second term has become more eventful than his first. Last year, of course, the session was abuzz with the governor trying to get changes in teacher reform and education and pension reform, and the changes that he did get from the legislature ended up going to court, and it's not been a good place for the governor to be as far as decisions from mostly Republican judges. So this time around, the governor is apparently going to go forward with a tax swap proposal of some kind, although the Legislative Fiscal Office is now crunching the numbers to determine whether the governor's tax swap makes sense and if the numbers actually come out to be revenue neutral. But if it happens, according to the governor's plan, it would be a 6.25% increase in sales taxes, and the state would do away with its income tax. And most people would be happy not to pay income tax. But on the other hand, an increase of 6.25% in sales taxes could result in all kinds of ramifications and repercussions. Today's Baton Rouge Advocate opines that it could starve local government because people would be less inclined to support any local taxes if this were to pass. Now, one option available to the governor would be to change course and propose some kind of phase-out over a period of time, perhaps 3 years. That may be in the offing, and the governor has some options. He is, after all, the leader of the state, and he has vast power, in fact, more power than most other governors, almost any other governor in the state, in the country. So we shall see how it shapes in the next few days and weeks to come. It will be a fascinating 9-week ride at the Capitol. 297-5633, and we're back with Representative Katrina Jackson. Sorry to lose you for a moment or two, but what's your early read on the governor's plan, Representative Jackson?
Well, right now, the governor's plan, of course, you saw them jerk it back, and for 3 weeks, it seemed dead on arrival. Now, of course, you can never tell what they're going to come with next, and that's not being judgmental, but if you saw anything from last session, when they were sure they had the votes on education, they ran it pretty fast. But he didn't have the endorsement of I'd only heard about four or five members say that they were for the plan. And that was even before the numbers came out showing that we would lose $500 million in revenue from the plan.
Now, the Legislative Black Caucus has been poring over the numbers, as just about every other lawmaker. I'm sure all other lawmakers have if they're doing their jobs. And the Black Caucus has come through with a plan of its own.
Right. It's a very simple plan. I think everyone can understand it. What we realized was that the one thing about tax reform was that if you were doing tax reform, you were doing it to attract businesses to your area. Because the truth be told, when your state is already in a $1.3 billion deficit and you're doing a revenue-neutral tax reform, you're definitely not doing it to bring revenue in. So the only thing you could be looking at was your tax ranking and how you could be more attractive to businesses and individuals that come into this state, you know? So you definitely can do that by cutting taxes, because then in a $1.3 billion deficit, it would take us into a larger deficit. I think with the governor's plan, we will be in a $1.8 billion deficit next year.
Now, I noticed one of the items in the plan from the Black Caucus is to increase the cigarette tax, but you're not going as far as the governor's plan would. Instead of $1.05, you're going 33 cents. Why are you going for a reduced rate?
Well, let me tell you something. You have to follow the trend of people. In every bordering state, the taxes are higher than Louisiana. The rate that we're going for is a rate that's the same as Mississippi's. And so the trend wouldn't be that people will cross over state lines to purchase their tobacco products. As long as we put our taxes, cigarette tax, at the same level as the lowest bordering state, then we were safe on that issue. Because you didn't want to discourage business in that industry. You do want to discourage people from smoking, but you don't want them to have an alternative just to go over to a bordering state and purchase their tobacco products. So we looked at the fact that they were businesses just like everyone else, and that if we put it up to a dollar, the only thing people would do is go over to Mississippi and buy their products in the buck. Because I can tell you that for our cities that border Texas cities, because their tobacco tax is very high, and who border Arkansas and places like that, people generally cross over to our state and purchase their tobacco products in the bulk.
All right.
And we didn't want that trend to follow because it would defeat the purpose.
But most of the people don't live on the border.
Right. Most people don't live on a border, but a large amount of them do. And I can tell you, North Louisiana, Jim, just being straight with you, we have people that travel over to Vicksburg, Mississippi, in the northeast quarter of our state quite frequently for the casino over there, which makes it an easy travel.
Mm-hmm.
And I live in Monroe, Louisiana, which is about 45 to 50 minutes from Vicksburg, and I can tell you my constituency quite frequently visits Vicksburg casino boats, and that became an issue, especially in the northeast quarter. But when you look at those who live in the far northwest, when you look at those who live in the Lake Charles and further past there, that was a significant amount. That was what was wrong with the governor's plan. When it came out, they had to go back and make a large reduction in what the revenue from tobacco tax increased because of people's trends and where they would buy their tobacco products from.
Charles on North Foster. Charles, good morning. You're on the air with Representative Katrina Jackson.
Good morning, Representative. Good morning, Jim. Goldman Sachs has said that the biggest threat to the economy as well as to the government is uninsured and the underinsured. The Advocate just had a story about a $386 million savings the state would receive if it accepted the Medicaid expansion. And also, isn't this gentle tax just another form of that old consumption tax and something he's probably going to try to use if he picks up his banner and points it towards Washington? I'll hang up and listen.
You want me to answer that, Jim? That's how we saw it. When we looked at Governor Jindal's plan, it was a national plan that did not fit into the scheme of Louisiana. Even Texas, whose taxes are very differently structured than ours, had not done away with all of their taxes, and it was a pretty risky thing. The other part of his plan dealt with sales tax, increasing it, I think, now by 2-point-something% in the state, which means most parishes and municipalities would have had a sales tax of about 12-14%. We looked at the trend of people buying online and realized that this was more of a national plan. It became very evident, I think, the expansion of services was going to tax people heavily, and we saw that there was going to be a large tax burden on the low to middle class individuals of this state, and that was very concerning. Now, on the Medicaid expansion, because it was a twofold question, on the Medicaid expansion, everything that Governor Jindal's administration put out said that we would lose money. Well, about 2 weeks ago, in a clandestine way, the Department of Health and Hospitals released a new report saying that we would save $300-some million. And so, of course, some of my members have a bill in, and we are supporting it and have all signed off on it, to include Medicaid expansion. I think the biggest thing that people need to know about the business part of the Medicaid expansion is this. On January the 1st of 2014, businesses with 50 or more employees will be forced to provide insurance for their employees. Now, when you look at restaurants, convenience store owners who have large corporations, maybe 4 or 5 or 10 in different areas of the state, and you pay them a wage of $7 to $10 an hour, they're forced to provide that insurance. However, if we accept Medicaid expansion, for the most part, those persons will become Medicaid eligible and would receive Medicaid. And it will definitely help the employers who wouldn't have to provide insurance at that point for that population.
297-5633 is your number. We're going to take a short break, and we will return with Representative Katrina Jackson, 3 days away from the opening of the legislative session, and the Louisiana Black Caucus has issued a plan of its own. We'll talk more about that, some interesting items in this plan, when we resume our conversation with Representative Jackson. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Thank you for your support for WRKF, and we're 3 days away from the opening of the legislative session. Governor Bobby Jindal took the oath on January 14th, 2008, and here we are 5 years and a few months later, and the governor's popularity level, according to Bernie Pinsonat's poll, is at 37.8%. And he's taking some chances as far as trying to make changes in all realms of life in Louisiana. And his latest maneuver from the governor is to try to get rid of the state income tax and replace it with a substantial sales tax, which would make ours the highest in the United States by a pretty good margin. Now, the Black Caucus is issuing its own plan, which I think the caucus should be commended for, because quite often people criticize and they don't offer a counter plan, but the Black Caucus has done that. The plan from Representative Jackson and her colleagues would reduce all corporate income tax rates in the state by 2%, and it would also mean that income taxes would be reduced to some people in Louisiana. The first $25,000 would be taxed at 2%, the next 25 at 3%, the next 50 at 4%, the next 100,000 at 5%, and over 200,000 at 6%. 297-5633 is your number. Now, who's going to carry the water for the Black Caucus, Representative Jackson? Who's going to be filing these bills?
Jim, actually, our bill is a multifaceted. Our package is multifaceted. I filed the corporate income tax and the individual income tax bill. On the corporate income tax bill, we actually eliminate franchise tax, because when looking at increasing our tax rate ranking nationally, that was the one tax that most states didn't have, and it was a drag on our tax ranking. And so we reduced that. We reduced the corporate income tax rates by 2%, but we took away corporations' ability to claim any federal tax deductions. So basically, the second thing that the Tax Foundation looks at nationally is our tax rates. So instead of giving them consistently high tax rates, we reduced their rates and took away all of their federal tax deductions, which basically makes filing taxes simpler, but gets us down to a rate that increases our ranking. And that's what we did with the corporate tax rate. So it was a true swap out in that sense. When individual tax rates, we went back, and I'm not sure if you have our most recent bill that we filed on that issue. We reduced everyone's taxes to a quarter of a percentage, which cost the state $30 million. So regardless of where you are, no one receives more of a discount than anyone else. Regardless of what you make, everyone receives a quarter of a percentage of a tax decrease across the board. And we kept the individual tax deductions in the same. We didn't touch those at all. And what we did was we increased the cigarette tax, which brings in about $153 million. The total Black Caucus plan cost about $90 million. And so we have about $60 million left, about $63 million left in the cigarette tax, and we're dedicating that $63 million to health care. And it's important to mention that we're dedicating it to Medicaid. Now, in dedicating that to Medicaid, we get a federal match, and that translates to about 90-something to $100 million in additional health care dollars in the area of Medicaid, which kind of helps clear up this problem we're having with having a deficit in the state's budget as far as health care is concerned. Now, we also worked with the Louisiana Municipal Association because the other thing that was burdening us is the way corporations filed their local taxes. Even though we had an e-file system, corporations were only allowed to file two or three of their local taxes on e-file system. We've now expanded through the help of the Louisiana Municipal Association. I believe Gerard Jackson, Representative Gerard Jackson, is carrying that bill in our package, and it allows for them to file all of their local taxes on e-file but still pay the local government directly.
297-5633 for Representative Katrina Jackson, Democrat from Monroe. Paul in Opelousas. Hello, Paul. You're on the air with Representative Jackson.
Hello, Representative Jackson. Got a question for you, and a good subject. I'm a small business owner in Opelousas, Louisiana, and my question was this: sales tax. Will the increased state sales just push people to go online and buy those items, which has no sales tax online right now? Are we just shifting everything to online purchases, even in-state, you know, buying from one company to another in-state? Are we actually pushing the sales of items just offline, and that's it? That's the question. Thank you.
Okay, if I may, was the one thing that concerned us about the governor's plan. So in the Black Caucus plan, there's no increase in sales taxes. It does not hit local governments. We also have in a plan carried by one of our other members an internet sales tax bill. After speaking with the congressman from our area, they said if it's ever likely that an internet sales tax bill will pass Congress, it will be this year. And so one of our members has a bill. We worked in conjunction with the Louisiana Municipal Association to make sure that it is contingent upon the federal bill passing, that as soon as the federal bill passes, we will be able to implement sales tax on internet sales in this area. So two things for small business owners. The Black Caucus plan does not increase sales tax, so it keeps you stable there. And it also has a bill that says as soon as the federal government passes their bill, there will be an immediate sales tax put on internet sales that should bring in about $400 million. So actually our bill discourages internet sales and brings business back to the local business owner. So that was one of the important things that we looked at in our bill. So there's no sales tax increase, and there's also a provision for internet sales.
There is blood in the water right now with the governor's poll numbers sagging to 37.8%. Now, we've noted on this show many times that the governor, in order for him to succeed on this tax swap, he's got to get all the Republican votes and about 10 Democratic votes in the House. Is there any way humanly possible to accomplish this?
Jim, you want me to be honest with you? If I can call you Jim. Everyone calls me Katrina. I am so not focused on the governor's plan because it was horrible for Louisiana. I have moved into a more progressive plan. It's the plan the Black Caucus have offered. My question every day has switched from can the governor get their votes to whether I can, whether members can have a plain reading of our bills and understand what we're doing. And can we get the vote we need to make Louisiana whole?
Well, you'll need two-thirds support as well.
Well, actually, we only have one bill that needs two-thirds support, and because we're taking away the corporation's federal deduction, because we don't eliminate taxes. We just adjust the rates, and that's a 53 vote needed.
You're saying a simple majority,
on most
of your package.
The only bill in our package that needs a two-thirds vote is the one that takes out of the Constitution. Right now, the Constitution says that we are allowed that everyone's allowed deductions. We have to change the sentence in the Constitution that says deductions are regulated by statutes because we're taking away the corporation's ability to claim federal deductions so we can have a true swap-out plan. And something else that people should understand is that the caucus package doesn't do away with any exemptions. We felt like that our package should be as revenue-neutral as possible. And the only revenue that we raise is $90 million. Now, the caucus does have separate bills to raise revenue, but this package is not contingent on those. So we've met with businesses, and no business has come out to oppose it because, the truth be told, this is a very progressive tax package for businesses. It's very progressive for individuals because individuals get a 0.25% tax decrease. Now, people may say that's not a lot, but for those who are paying in $10,000 to $20,000 on their personal income, anything helps when you're paying that in, especially during these struggling times.
Now, you would also need some Republican support, since
yes.
Republicans control the majority in the House. and you'll need other Democrats beyond the Black Caucus.
Yes.
For example, what does Representative John Bel Edwards say about your plan?
Well, John Bel, of course, has been on the campaign trail. You know, he's running for governor, and we're cheering him on. And we meet on Monday for the first time as a Democratic caucus, and the Democratic caucus will take their position. It's my surety that the Democratic caucus will not be against this bill, because this bill does two things, and we've talked over the phone constantly. This bill promotes our tax ranking increasing so that we can promote so that we can attract businesses while giving away the bathtub and the baby and the water. Okay. And that's what we've been doing, you know. And it keeps every individual in this state whole. Past that, this package is very progressive in that we have a unified tax force system, and it doesn't cost the state any additional money. We were paying $500,000+ a year for a tax appeal board. That money would transfer to a uniform tax court, and so that's no cost to the state. And so my presumption, and I'm being very presumptuous in this, but working with John Bell and others before, said it will not be a problem because it doesn't do anything to the constituent but save them money. It doesn't give any money to businesses. Besides, it does give them about $54 million in a tax break. However, we make that up in a cigarette tax, and we have an additional $63 million in there that will equate to about $93 to $100 million in federal in health care.
Mm-hmm. This is your second session, right? Regular
yes,
session.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Does it seem that way, Jim?
Well, it's been a busy time for
yes.
you. Last year was a rambunctious session, and this year has the potential to have a lot of volatility as well. Has the governor met with the Black Caucus at any point during your first term in office?
Yes, actually the governor and I have met, I think, twice. Paul Rainward and I have met about three or four times. We met recently to talk about our tax plan. And I told Paul that we were, of course, pushing it forward without deference to anyone else's plan. Of course, we're not supporting the governor's plan, but of course, we haven't come to an agreement on anything and probably won't. But we will push it, Jim. If you remember, if you followed Sessions last year, I ran two bills that the governor was opposed to. Those bills passed, one by unanimous vote, in the House, and one of them had 36 out of 39 senators votes, and the governor ended up vetoing that. So, and I say that to you to say that I don't presume that you need the governor to pass something, because I passed two very controversial bills with him bringing down all of his people to committee and opposing it.
Mm-hmm.
And he vetoed it. But I can tell you this, is going to be a session unlike any other session. All bills are running pretty fast through the process because we got them filed early, you know, in the sense of getting them heard in committee. And so at any time, if we get the support we need and these bills pass and it's vetoed, and my hope is that we'll get them back in time to do a veto override before session is over. And I have been talking to Republicans individually, and they're looking at the package, and they're saying this is good for business. Katrina, it may be something good. And so we're in negotiations even with those members. If you notice, we've been doing a huge bipartisan effort as a caucus. We met with Republican, the fiscal hawks, and what we agreed with was this. They had five or six bills in their package. As chairman of the Black Caucus, I co-authored four of those bills, and those were the bills that said, hey, we should get this budget out in time to where when we send it to the governor, we do not agree with his vetoes. We have a chance while we're still in session to go back and override those vetoes. So you've seen me sign on to other members' packages that are Republican.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you explain the governor's low level? And when I say low, Republicans generally don't do well with African-American voters as a whole. But this governor, when you look at the numbers that were released earlier this week by Bernie Pinsonet, is really cratering when it comes to support from the Black community. And that's compared to other Republicans such as David Vitter and Jay Darden. How do you explain that?
Well, the governor did not in his first term reach out to the Black Caucus at all. He didn't see the need to work with the Black Caucus. I don't know if you saw, heard in the press as the chairman before me came forth and said, look, he never even meets with us. This year was the first time that he actually consciously twice has met with the chairman of the caucus. Before that, you did a quick meeting with him, if any. But that translated into the legislation he brought and how it impacted the Black community, because we didn't have any input. So what you saw was him decreasing services that are usually you see in low poverty areas of Black communities. You saw him tapping out on healthcare resources. You saw him tapping out on higher ed resources, and education and resources for the public schools. Those are always three issues that are very important to the African-American community. So when a governor fails to recognize that, then you're going to have a very low rating in the African-American community in those areas. And that's what happened. But did we send letters? Did we try to talk to him? Did we encourage him to do otherwise? Yes. And he did not do so, and so you see the effect of his rating. I think what's more surprisingly, Jim, about his rating is that if you go outside of the African-American community, he doesn't have a good rating in any community, not even in the Republican community.
Well, he did have a 64% support level among Republicans, but that's lower than where he was.
Right.
And he has no African-American cabinet secretaries, none, in a state that's 32% African-American.
Yes.
Why has that not been an issue?
Yes, Representative Barrow, one of our members and former chairmen, and she was chairman when he came in, she really hit home with that. We did a private meeting. We were very respectful in that. I was executive director of the caucus at the time working for them. The members were very respectful in that. They warned him of this. They warned him of being exclusive of African Americans. And
we've got a roll, Representative. I'm sorry, but thank you for joining us, and let's talk again soon.
All right, thank you.
Take care, and we'll return after this timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633, or Inkstershow at WRKF.org. Thank you so much for supporting WRKF and supporting this hour of programming on our favorite station. And we're joined in studio by two gentlemen who have connections to WRKF and the community at large. Chris Brooks, he's the general manager of Dig Magazine, former board member of WRKF, by the way.
Yes, sir.
And John Kaufman, 8 years now as director of marketing and programming at the Manship Theater. He was there day one. I was thinking that, the Manship Theater is named after the Manship family, of course, and they've sold the newspaper, and the Shaw mm-hmm. Center is named after the Shaw Group, which has been sold by Jim Bernhardt. So are new names in the offing, John Kaufman? Not
to my knowledge. I mean, that's...
Won't become the Kaufman Theater?
I mean, that would be fantastic.
Don't they have a bowl in the lobby you can throw your business card in for naming it?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
I think they do.
What do they have to pay to get the name? Do you know?
That I don't know.
You don't?
That I do not know.
I'd like to know. Okay. Because the Shaw Center and the Manship Theater, we say it a lot on this show.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's very true.
It has great value.
Absolutely, it does.
It could be the Dig Magazine Theater.
It really could. Or Brooks Kaufman Theater.
Kaufman Brooks.
Well, these guys are in studio to talk about the upcoming Blues Fest in Baton Rouge, which, of course, is a predecessor to the Jazz Fest in New Orleans. And this year is a big event, and it is that time of year. And Chris is the chairman, right?
Yes, Jim, I am. I am.
So what's going to happen next week from Saturday, the 13th?
All right, we have a lot going on with this year's Baton Rouge Blues Festival. Outside of the festival itself, we have a number of different pre-festival events. We had one last night, actually, at Radio Bar. It was our listening party. But next Thursday, we partnered with Forum 35. We're having a panel discussion. It'll be in Hartley Bay Studios. It starts at 6:30, goes till 9. But we'll have Henry Gray, Dave Henson, Alan Abrams, and they're going to sit around and discuss the blues, and it's... heritage within this community itself. And then Friday night, we have a great event called the Rent Party. And we got the name Rent Party from back in the day. Musicians, in order to make rent, they would invite their friends over, put a hat out in the living room, mm-hmm. and people would pay and donate to make the rent. So this is going to be with Blind Boy Paxson, who's one of the festival musicians. He is like a throwback. He sounds like he's Robert Johnson, actually,
right.
From like 1920. But... he is going to be playing at Iron Design, which is off of North 19th, and there are tickets available for this show. Only 100 people are going to be – only 100 tickets are available, actually, and this is going to be awesome, just him playing by himself for like an hour.
At Iron Design.
Iron Design. Yeah, it's an iron workshop that we're going to clean out and just put a upright piano in it, and he's going to play. And it's going to be a really, really cool experience for those that are attending.
Sounds like it. On North 19th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, Saturday's the big day, and you've got a big array of well-known blues musicians.
Yes, sir, we do. this year with Jay Darden and him choosing Year of the Music, we kept that in mind when it came to picking the artists for this year's festival. So all the artists that are playing this year outside of Robert Randolph are either from Louisiana or are one generation removed from the state itself. So we have Bobby Rush, Robert Randolph and the Family Band, local legend Henry Gray, Lavelle White, CeCe Adcock, Brian Lee, Rudy Richard, as I said, Blind Boy Paxton, Baby B, and Dave Henson and the Blisters. So it's starting at 11 a.m.
Dave Henson and the Blisters.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Good name.
It is. It is a very good name.
Hopefully the crowd isn't the one with the blisters, but
right.
But these are well-known musicians in the blues community, and they're converging in Baton Rouge. And there's some people who've made this possible for a few years. How many years is it now for the Blues Festival?
Well, it actually started in 1981, and it went actually at Southern University on the Bluff up there, and then actually it went all the way to 1994, mm-hmm. and then it went away, and then in 2008 it came back.
Johnny Palazzotto's had a mm-hmm. big impact on this, and the Manship Theater is partnering with Chris Brooks and Johnny and others. How's the Manship going to be involved this year?
We were involved, and Chris and I started just conversations a while back about just kind of partnering with Manship and the Blues Fest as almost like the production side of the team, just helping book the acts and then help with setting up the staging and the whole layout of the festival being, that's what we do pretty much day in, day out there. It just seemed like a natural fit, and, you know, we always want to support local festivals, and this is just a perfect one to jump aboard on. And so mm-hmm. looking forward to many, many years of this partnership.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's been great so far.
And hopefully, if you're downtown next week, particularly on Saturday, you won't have your car towed. Last week's cover story in Dig Magazine was the talk of the town. It was about towing in Baton Rouge. We've still got a lot of people, good citizens, trying to mind their business, and they park somewhere. They have no idea that they're risking having their car towed away, and then they come out, and that is always a naked feeling. When you come to your spot and there's not a car there, and you know that you've either been towed or it's stolen.
It kind of gives you the blues.
It really does give you the blues.
It does indeed. But people were buzzing about this story, Chris Brooks. I think it's a rite of passage in Baton Rouge. You have to be towed at some point.
Absolutely. Just like paying taxes, I think.
Have you been towed?
Oh, yeah. I've definitely been towed. I mean, numerous times in college. But I've gotten better with it. But, you know, yeah, they've been pretty sneaky as of late, you know, with the towing practices going on in Baton Rouge.
And this was regarding one particular towing company that was towing a lot of people from the garage downtown in the parking garage, right?
In the parking garage, yes. No chance at all. John, you park there every single day.
I do, but I have a parking pass, so it hasn't affected me.
Well, can you imagine going into a parking garage with a tow truck and pulling people's cars out while they're downtown attending some function like the Blues Fest? What does that do for tourism in our community?
Not very much. It's pretty discouraging. Yeah, as mentioned in the article, family comes in town to visit their daughter, gets towed, and they spend 5 hours at, you know, said towing company.
Yeah, welcome to Baton Rouge.
Yeah, trying to negotiate getting their car back.
And the thing is, once I was dining at Louis and parked at a restaurant next door that wasn't open at 6 in the morning and had my car towed, and I go out and ask the tow guy to remove his stuff from my car, and I ended up having to pay cash to get my car back.
That's hustling
They force you to pay cash.
That's, yeah.
Maybe we're in the wrong line of work.
I completely agree.
Have you been towed, John Kaufman?
I have been towed, yes.
So we have something in common. But yeah. but those tow truck drivers better watch it come next Saturday, because Chris and John will be looking out for the thousands of people who are converging in our city for this event. Where will most of the activity, which stage are we talking about? We're going to be down at the new area around the...
Galvez stage?
Yeah, the Galvez stage. That's right.
Correct. Yes, that will be one stage location. Then we're also going to have our Swamp Blues stage, which will be on Lafayette Street, which will have the more traditional Swamp Blues, like Henry Gray, Lavelle White. We started last year backstage at the Blues, which will be in the Senate Chambers at the Old State Capitol. And it's pretty much a Q&A with either local blues enthusiasts like, you know, Maxine Crump, Ian Perkins, and media guys like Alex Cook interviewing the artists that are playing at the festival. So we'll have a guitar set up, And we'll also be asking them questions for about 30, 45 minutes. So it should be really, really great to check out and just kind of get to know these artists a little bit better. And all this information is available online at BatonRougeBluesFestival.org.
BatonRougeBluesFestival.org. As I noted, Chris Brooks, you were a member of the WRKF board for a few years, and you know how important it is. You've seen the books. You know how important it is. Brooks has seen the books for people to contribute to their public radio station when it's pledge time.
Yeah, it is definitely that time. Please go out and donate for WRKF today. I know they're doing their drive today, and I can't tell you how many conversations that have started just from something that I've picked up by listening to WRKF. Mainly a lot of it coming from you, Jim, actually with your show.
Well, and that's what it's all about. It's a situation in which somebody writes about something in Dig Magazine. We talk about it on the air. The people at large talk about it. And suddenly we have people engaged about these towing companies that are tormenting the good people of Baton Rouge and, perhaps more importantly, tormenting the visitors to our community. I'm sure Paul Arrigo is hot and bothered by this.
I'm sure he is.
We'll have to get him back. Thank you very much.
Thank
good
you
luck
very
with
much,
the Blues Fest.
Chris
Thanks. Brooks, good to see you, John Kaufman. Congratulations. 8 years at the Manship Theater. He was there day one.
Day one.
And we'll return to WRKF. Stay tuned.